listen to two married lesbians discuss an LGBTQ plus book each month that highlights the queer human condition as they use connection and humor to relate the issues to us as a queer community. She's Anna.
And she's Miranda.
I am. And we're two married lesbians.
We are.
And we're all queer here. And we're back.
Indeed we are. Here to discuss Old Enough. So this is an adult read and we'd like to issue a trigger warning before we get started.
Yes, this is definitely, we want to have a trigger warning at the top. This book deals with sexual assault and rape. If that's something that is a trigger for you, like it was for myself, please give yourself some grace. Maybe this is one you skip. Maybe this is one that you read slowly, or you talk to friends about, have somebody in your life that you can discuss it with, because it's definitely heavy material, important to talk about, but heavy stuff.
So author Haley Jacobson is bisexual and uses she, her pronouns. This is her debut novel.
Indeed.
Let's jump in.
Okay, let's jump in. So even though we had to issue a trigger warning, one of my first thoughts about the book, it's very lighthearted, when the author calls out those plastic chairs with the two metal like bolts in them that your hair would always get like wrapped around and stuck. I was like, that one, I know that's something literal, but that like,
I don't remember that.
Really? It was like at the top, like
when they were in high school?
No, I think it was like when she went to the like gender studies class.
Sexuality studies 101. Yes. That's what she called it, but it was called something else. Yeah.
But yeah, when she went to that and they're like those plastic chairs that are in classrooms with like the two little metal bolts or whatever.
Oh, in the back. Yeah.
That if your hair
is long enough. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I got you.
I was like back in the day when I had like super long hair, it was every time you got up from your chair, you'd rip hair out of your head. Hated that.
Because it like hugged, like your hair just like slid under.
Well, because there's like static. Mm-hmm. So it gets sucked up against it and wrapped around. I know that's like something literal, but it's just like, I had such a visceral reaction.
Those little details. Mm-hmm. I like that she mentioned that sexuality studies class was a requirement for all gays. And I loved the professor.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that professor. I love like a lot of those assignments and like the way that she would like pull things out of people. The descriptions that this author gives for all these different characters, I just thought it was really interesting, and you really felt like she gave you enough that you were like, oh my gosh, I get this person. I don't want to be friends with them, or oh my gosh, I want to know more about them. I mean, even, what was her name? Was it Bridget? The blonde, like, sorority sister that was in the class and then like went through a breakup.
Yeah.
Like
that was like into a girl later.
Yeah, I was like, at first I was like, oh, yeah, this what kind of energy is she bringing to it? But like, I really did enjoy seeing that story arc and like how, you know, you're seeing Sab's point of view and seeing the world through her eyes and seeing kind of, oh gosh, what is she up to? A little miss perfect with her nails. And then later comes across her in this just horrific state of drunkenness in which I guess her jerk of a boyfriend was, you know, like yelling at her through the phone or something. But like you kind of see this little arc for her. I don't know, it's been a long time since I've been in college at that age. I mean, I did go back to school, but like it brought back those memories. I don't miss the drama of college, you know?
I didn't have as drama filled of college as this, maybe because I wasn't out in college.
Maybe.
I don't know, and it was a different time, but Like the whole Nova character.
Yes.
Was very unlikable. And like when Nova breaks up with her and then Savvy starts wondering if she's just college experimenting or like what's going on.
Yeah.
Then she thinks that she must be into girls because she's into Shane from the L Word. And I feel like how many people feel that way or have felt that way, you know? Mm. And they're like, oh, well, I just think, you know, Shane is attractive. And it's like, maybe that says something about you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you think it's okay because it's just on a TV show.
Do you, okay, so here's a question. This brings up a question I'm just thinking of now.
It's like the Shane test.
That's not what I was going to say. I was like, do you think that being able to see sapphic representation on TV, do you feel like that is like this really safe way of...
like connecting to that part inside of you?
Yeah, like trying out a crush on a woman. Like, do you think that that's like that this way that you can kind of start to explore that side of you, or do you feel like it's more of almost like a cop out where you could be like, oh well, use it as an excuse to experiment with your feelings?
How do you mean?
Like, oh, I like. Okay, so you know how, like, sometimes straight girls, when they get drunk, straight girls, quote-unquote,
mm-hmm.
when they get drunk, will hit on queer women.
Yeah.
Because it's a safe way to flex your flirt muscles.
Mm-hmm. Or your sexuality.
Yeah, well, exactly. do you feel like watching TV, like, the L Word, stuff like that, like, do you think that people are just like, oh, I like her, but, like, they mean it internally, but they don't mean it when they're saying it out loud. Like, it's like this stepping stone to trying to explore your sexuality.
Oh, they could be like, oh, there's scenes from the L Word that are hot, but then, like, they go home and sleep with their boyfriend, you know? Like,
aren't bisexual.
Right. I'm like, I see, you know, there are scenes that have been hot, I thought, that were heteros every so often, but I don't want to be like, oh, I want to go find a guy and recreate that.
So it's more about, like, this,
like, you can,
chemistry.
Yeah, like, you can hot. Just enjoy the characters being together. Like, oh, that's hot because you're, like, invested.
Okay.
But, I think that's one of the reasons we have sex scenes in media is to, like, show, like, that connection and, like, what it can be.
Well, I think that's why the good reason.
The good reason, yeah. Of, like, oh, their closeness and what that would be like with those characters' feelings for each other.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like I said, I didn't, you know, I started watching The L Word when I was a teenager. And really started wondering about who I was attracted to and why. And then that kind of slipped into, you know, what you fantasize about and daydream about. And I think that's kind of the question to ask is...
Well, and that's...
Is what you think about when you're not watching that show.
I think that's, like, kind of an interest... Like, I've never been a big fantasizer. I don't know why.
Like, I was saying daydream. Not like, when I'm, you know, home alone.
But, like,
I'm just like... Or just like a sexy daydream, I guess, would be fantasizing.
But
like,
I don't really have those much. I mean, I kind of have them about you sometimes.
Oh,
but
well,
like,
you're welcome.
But like, that's because that's an experience I've already had. I don't think I've ever been like, wow, I'm really daydreaming about this human over here. But I haven't, but I hadn't had that experience with that person. Like,
how sad for you. So I guess like my question is like, do you ever daydream about like what you would do if you won the lottery or... If
I wouldn't say daydream.
If you want a trip to a different country, I don't know. Like, you never just play with your life, and like that would never happen, probably.
No, more it's more okay. If somebody asks me, what would you do with $1 million?
No, but do you take your mind there?
No,
naturally.
My mind only goes there for things that are scary. Like, what would quick Miranda? What would you do if a burglar broke into the house?
Oh,
what
okay.
would you do if somebody came and robbed you? What would you do if, like, it's always scary things. And I'm like, what is my plan?
I do that when I drive because forever ago in Driver's Ed, you know, before you did the driving part, you did the, like, the video watching and, like, the mm-hmm. written part, study part.
Mm-hmm.
My, both instructors, my written part and the driving part were horrendous. And they were like, when you're driving, just think about terrible situations and how you would approach them. Like, if you blew out a tire and you're on the highway, what happened? To this day, I'm mortified and terrified. I'm not morbid. I'm terrified of having a blowout on the highway because I don't know what I would do.
So they didn't then try give to you pull, an answer.
No, but like they would, but like you pull over. It just depends how bad it is, and if you hit someone else while you're trying to brake and get over, and I'm like, oh my god. So, no, but not like that's more like catastrophizing, I think, and letting okay. your anxiety run your daydreaming. Like just like I said, I think some people are natural dreamers and daydreamers, and some people aren't, and that's okay. I am.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I'm just not much. I guess I'm not much of a daydreamer. I guess that's where our brains are a little different.
But that's what I think when like the sexuality questioning comes into play of like what you think about when you're with someone you're with and just looking at, you know, if you're on dating apps, because that's how the world meets people nowadays, mm-hmm. who you're attracted to or, you know,
are you? I think I just struggled with that for so long.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. But,
struggle to date because you're awkward as heck.
No. I mean, like, struggled with figuring out who I'm attracted to and all that.
Yeah. No, that's what, you know, Savvy goes through in this and, like, wondering what that label is. And, you know, the trauma, you know, comes up a lot with her.
Yeah. Well, and, so, like, I initially, when I first started reading the book, I was like, it's okay. It's fine. And then it was like, as you go through her story and you learn about this event that happened to her, and then eventually you kind of realize, oh my goodness, she was raped. And then like, as it unfolds, it was kind of like watching a car wreck happening in slow motion, like as the rest of the story is going through,
like wondering how bad it was going to be, or how it was like,
or how the aftermath unfold, what the aftermath was. But I really related to the story a lot. Like once I realized what this through line was going to be, that we're kind of seeing her before and her now, and then understanding that trauma informed, you know, all these events that are now kind of unfolding for her. It really hooked me because like I don't share this with everybody, but like, it's not something I hide, but like I had had intimate partner violence, and it was something that my body and my mind had blocked out. And I was just, I remember driving down the highway one day, and then all of a sudden my brain was like, I think you're good enough now. We're going to let you remember this happened. And it was just like, what the bleep? But I was like, I remember calling my friend and being like, how do I not know this happened? How did I go for years and not know that this happened? And then one day, boom, I was like, this is the thing that happened. And then apparently I just kept living like everything was normal afterward. And I mean, you know, you get that it's like this safety mechanism that your body is like
protecting you. Yeah.
Yeah. You're stuck here. So,
well, I think she mentions that, or it comes up in the book, that you don't have to label trauma as trauma. Mm-hmm. And I really disagreed with that because I think we have to call things what they are, and it can be scary
to process it.
Yeah. And that's a scary word. I get that. But that doesn't change what it is by not saying what it is. You know, like a couch is a couch, whether I call it a settee or not, like it's a couch, you know?
Yeah.
I did like, however, when they talked about how happiness and feeling fine can happen alongside processing your trauma, and like having those good days and then kind of like feeling guilty because like, well, shouldn't I be focused on this? Like, that's not how we process things as humans.
Right. It doesn't always go on our timeline.
Exactly. Sorry, my yawn. But yeah, exactly. So when I was reading that, I was like, okay, well, I disagree that we do need to label trauma. And I also agree, you know, that you can have, you know, moments of happiness and joy and feeling good while you're still processing.
And you don't need to feel guilty.
Right.
Because, like, the goal is to get to carve back out that sense of normalcy for yourself, right? You have to work through
it. And they got into that debate in class where it's, like, it's so rarely someone, like, on the street attacking you.
Yeah.
Like, it's so often someone you know.
Yes.
You know, again, that intimate partner violence, or family member or whatever, you know, that kind of thing, depending mm-hmm. on the age. And so, like, I loved that kind of heated argument of, like, why do we always, you know, I know, of course, you know, we carry our keys a certain way when you're a woman and, you know, walking to your car and don't park in a dark place at night, you know, or, you know, an unlit place at night, but that kind of stuff. And it's like, we do, we have that story that we perpetuate in, mm-hmm. in life, but so often it really is someone that we know.
Well, but that begs the question, like we talk about so much of, we're just talking about catastrophizing, thinking about the worst case scenario. There's not, what are you going to do that protects you from the people you love? If they're going to be the person that does this, like, I just, oh yeah, thinking about it that way kind of, hurts your mind a little bit. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't have to. Okay, I know this is skipping to the end, but we're already talking about the hard subject, but at the end.
Well, I really liked the storybook and then the hair cutting. That was so great.
That was really good. But I loved at the end where she's talking about, they're talking about justice, right? Because mm-hmm. like you have this initial kind of, or she's working with the sorority sister. Laura. I called her Bridget earlier. Laura. Where she's working with Laura and they're like
still
a coffee
great
shop and she runs off to like throw up because like that trauma is living in your body, you know? And then she comes out and she's like, we got to do a different day, yada, yada. But like that whole project was talking about justice. So at the end, where she's talking about how for her, she thinks justice is, it's kind of backwards. Because we talk about justice for like these crimes. This person should go to jail. This, you know, the rapist should be behind bars. The rapist should... And all of it's framed on the perpetrator of the crime. And she's like, but none of this is about the victim. None of this is about how they take their life back, how they move on. And to me, like, that journey of her for herself, defining me as the victim of this, you know.
Because you have to make your own therapy schedule.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make your follow-up doctor's appointments.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It has to be about justice for you. How do you have your life after this? Like, you can't help that happened to you, but you can help what you do for yourself after the fact. And, like, that's justice. I thought that was a really poignant, like take on thinking about it and framing it that way. You feel like Olivia Benson would be proud.
Yes. Very much so.
We got more snoring puggies on this podcast again.
Well, I had to mention Vera because she was my favorite character.
Yeah.
Because she's a witch, she's poly, she's queer, and she's unapologetic.
Yes.
I just loved her sassiness.
I did too. I had like a little... when they were, it got a little...
when she brought her boyfriends?
No. That was awesome. But like when, I think it was towards the beginning of the book where it was like this smart Asian stereotype that it kind of felt like. But then it was just like casually a little bit. And then it was like, boom, you see this full-fledged character. She just happens to also be incredibly intelligent. Yeah, I thought she was gnarly. She was a super cool character. I really enjoyed every single time she showed up. I loved her chaotic energy, that she was like, I'm gonna live my life, this is what I'm about. I thought she was
like dope. I said, unapologetic.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciated that.
So okay, I enjoyed how we got to kind of see these different relationships that Sav had over time. Like she mentioned, was it Josh? He was like this liberal guy that like asked her pronouns and everything. She's like, it's like signaling, oh, he's going to be a really good dude. But then he turned out to not be that good a dude. But it just kind of like, it brought up, I think, you know, that topic of like virtue signaling, where it's like sometimes people do things that, you know, that make you think, oh, this could be a really safe person. And then
they put you at ease.
Yeah, they put you at ease. And then all of a sudden you hear them say, you know, something racist or
homophobic
or, you know, what have you. And I was like, ugh.
And we'll be right back. And we're back.
You want to talk about Wes?
Let's talk about Wes.
Let's talk about Wes and
baby,
me.
Let's talk about them and me.
I don't know. Oh, I was trying to make them rhyme.
Are you Seth now?
I was trying to make them rhyme.
Okay. Fair. Yeah, I think Wes was a pretty dope character.
The dopest of dope.
Yeah. I especially love the gay panic moments I've had. When Wes was like, I think it was like, what are you doing this weekend? And Sav was like trying to impress them. I was like, oh, I'm going to get a tattoo. And
oh, yeah.
And Wes was like, oh, yeah, what of? And Sav panics and says of a rocking chair her grandmother had. And Sav was like, oh, or Wes was like, dope, where? And Sav again panics and says on her hip. Which is a somewhat intimate and sexual portion to get a tattoo of your grandmother's rocking chair.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the callback at the end, to that moment where they've had like, you know, everything led up and they have like this beautiful intimate moment.
Well, awkward kissing, nosebleed, and then moving on.
Well, after that, yeah.
Yeah, after the cleanup.
But anyway, and Wes is like, where's the rocking chair? And Tom was like, about that.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
I thought, so we got to talk about Izzy, who was problematic throughout.
Yeah.
And it kind of made me think about, you know, a lot of friendships in high school just seem so forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, but when you think about it, usually, you know, we have like charter schools and private schools and, you know, choice schools now, but like usually your neighborhood puts you in that certain school. So your feeder pattern is determined by your geography where you live. So it's kind of like you're destined to go to school for 8 hours a day for, you know, 12 years. 12 years. Yeah. Well, I guess pre-K, whatever, but roughly 12 years with the same group of 100 and something people. And you just kind of, you know, when you find your group and even, you know, the friendships end and you switch groups and things kind of mix and match, that by the end of it, I think you kind of just feel like we'll never lose that connection. And
yeah.
Really, you just needed someone to talk to during that one period of calculus or biology,
yes,
or advisory that you just, so you didn't, you know, throw your pen and pencil at the wall.
Yeah. Well, but maybe because of that person, you threw your pen and pencil at the wall.
Yeah, that's true.
We
so
all
it could have gone
kids.
Back and forth. But you can also think about it because, like, when that one person in your class wasn't there, it made everything better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think about that. So when I have, like, when I think back on some of my friendships and how, like, they didn't survive high school, like, we just went so different and, like, we just wanted different things. Like, we're not compatible as people,
mm-hmm,
because of not just how much we change, but because of our destined paths.
Mm.
I feel like. So it's not, again, it's not like, oh, you're not as good as a person or I'm too better of a person. Like, it's nothing like that. It's this sense that we, you know, I believe that friendships are relationships and they have a certain length to them and they don't,
mm-hmm,
have to be forever. They could be rekindled later.
I mean, I definitely agree to that. Agree with that. I think it's so incredibly rare to have a friendship that even as geographically you move away from each other and you don't have that sphere of influence where you're touching base because of work or school, it's so rare for a friendship to last through that.
Even with all the technology we have now.
Even with that, I mean, sometimes because of it, but I think it's incredibly rare for a friendship to transcend it. I agree with you, but I think it's more about like your values and where you place importance. So while I know I've had friendships with people that I went to like high school with, and I thought they were really cool, we got along so well, but like as I've become an adult and I've seen more of the world, I've had space from the sphere of influence of like my parents, of teachers, of, you know, all those things that as a student you get inundated with, this is what matters, this is what you should care about, and now you're suddenly in the world making up your own mind. You, that person that maybe you are best friends with, you can end up on completely different paths.
Yeah, totally misaligned.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that that friendship that you had is any...
But you can just totally be on different planes and different...
Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't, you know, erode the impact of those relationships that you had. I mean, you know, I think about people that I meet at work that I really think are awesome people. They're cool people, but then like one or the other of us moves on to a different job. I don't feel that that relationship was any less impactful just because now they're somewhere else. I still think about memories and be like, oh, that was really funny. Oh, they did this and it made my day. But yeah, I'm with you. I think sometimes relationships just have a start point and an end point, and that's okay.
Well, I was thinking about the Izzy thing because, like, I, this is like over 10 years ago. That's how old I am. When you're in college, you know, you, that's back when Facebook was kind of starting. You had to have, I know that's how old I am, but you had to have a college email to have an account. And now it's not like that. Now we have every grandma and grandpa imaginable on there.
And some imaginary grandma and grandpa.
Right, exactly. So throughout my college years, I kept seeing like more and more friends pop up from high school. And like, I had one the other day and I had like, we had tons of friends in common, but I have no idea. Couldn't remember the name if it was tattooed on my arm. Like I was just like, I have no, so I like ignored it because I was like, I have no idea who you are. Why would you need to contact me? Anyway, so, but so 10 years ago, was making my way downtown, walking fast. Faces were passing.
And you were homebound.
Yeah. And so I had ended up coming out on Facebook and just posting me and my girlfriend, very like mild coming out, right? Mm-hmm. It was Pride Month. We were going to go down to Houston Pride. And my friend starts messaging me, like my close friend from high school. And we kind of had a couple dinners in here and there when I was in college. Never really had a firm plan, always really wanted to like float around, and like that was not me. Like I was very, you know,
very driven
and passionate. And and so she texted me like, oh, saw your post, when did you decide to be gay? And I was like,
problematic phrasing.
Well, it was problematic. We're still mild friends on Facebook, and I say that like I don't follow her, I try to ignore her. I just didn't want to like totally unfriend her because like I need her to see like my gay propaganda shit so that she you know takes in that
you're really trying to push that gay agenda
yeah on a little bit. She needs to open up her mind, but I was like, again, lives in the same small town that we grew up in, and I couldn't get away from fast enough. And my response to her back then was, I didn't decide to be gay, it's who I am, and I hope you accept that, or something of that, you know.
Yeah.
And she was just like, oh, okay. But I mean, this, it just reminded me of that when I was reading the part where, you know, there's like this intent versus impact comment. When Izzy calls Wes a boy and says that Savvy will always be boy crazy despite the fact that she's gay or bi or whatever. So there's
more. Yeah, that was an upsetting comment.
There's more biphobia there, but it's like, you know, I could kind of see where my friend was kind of thinking a similar thing of like, I was always boy crazy. It was like, no, I was just supporting your boy craziness. Like, there's a difference there.
Like, you don't want to be left out.
Yeah. Like, I want to, like, listen to you talk about how...
I'm like, I'll pick a...
shiny his hair is.
Let me pick a random boy. That one. I'm also crazy about this boy.
But if she was always fixating on someone, usually older, in an upper class, or a higher level of choir, so unattainable, you know? And so it was this kind of, like, fantasy I could join and be like, oh, yeah, his wavy hair, I could run my fingers through and like not have to worry about it because it was never going to happen.
Right. It was right? Like
it was a safe, you know, closeting, you know, fantasy. That's what I was trying to think about it. Yeah.
D- Okay, so let me ask you this. Did you ever have moments where your friend was like, oh, let's see if we can get you together with him, and like try to force that narrative?
I mean, a couple times, but then we ended up in the same class, and then we like dated, and then I just like didn't like let him touch me.
So. You're like, this will resolve itself.
Yeah, like you go to the movies enough times in the last row and nothing happens, wink, wink, they don't take you out again.
Perfect.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But then, okay, so this is something that I really struggle with. So we're talking about Izzy. Okay, well, fun comment. Her garden party, wedding party theme mm-hmm. with the hats, it was too much. So I had to put that out there. And then she says...
Well, Izzy was like, it was like this wedding thing was her whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
It became like... She was making it everything because... It was like
she had.
Growing up, that didn't seem like that was something that she was going to be able to attain.
That was confusing too. Like anybody can get married. Talk to the people who work in Vegas.
Well, I think it's one of those things that she was going at it so, so hard because it was like this thing that she felt she was never going to get. It felt so forced.
But that just goes back to this idea that we're all like... whether secretly or not, hoping to find someone to love us for our true being.
Yeah, but like...
And some people are just so toxic, no one will love you.
Well, but also...
Like Izzy.
Well, but I mean...
She's a hard person to love. I think that comes out in the book.
Yeah, because she doesn't take the time to understand those around her. She had quite a bit of narcissism that I think... as you went back and forth
between... And as any bride has, to be fair.
Okay... But jumping back and forth between the now and the past, you just started to see more and more of not only the disconnect between where Sav is and where Izzy is, but also how little Izzy was able to put time, attention, and energy into who Sav was as a person versus who Sav was as a sidekick.
Mm.
Like, that's how Izzy treated that relationship in many ways. And, you know, I don't know if that was, like, born out of her feeling like she was less than because she didn't seem to get as much attention from boys as Sav did.
And you're hot. I'm just giving you an eye roll moment. I know. It's just getting too serious for me.
Okay.
I know.
You know what I mean?
But then I thought, because we go back and forth, and sometimes it's confusing in the book, right? Because the characters are pretty much the same, of what period they're in, you know, the high school versus
college.
And there was some, like, bullying and stuff that was kind of hinted at. And then, like, toward the end, like, it was just a huge moment where Savvy admits that their friendship, I guess... when it ended in high school, because Izzy turned the whole school against her and cyberbullied her.
Yeah.
And that, like, whoa, like, was almost like a slap in the face, I think, to readers. Like, one, you built us up this whole way thinking that, you know, in my opinion, wrongly, that it was about her admitting that her brother had assaulted her.
Yeah.
That's what broke it up. That is what led to this.
Mm-hmm.
And that...
But it was more about Izzy's reaction
to the truth. Yeah. And so I was thinking, like, him being in the wedding party, you know, included in that, obviously, as a family member, that was gonna, like, she was gonna come through her own healing, which she does, but that she would also heal the relationship with Izzy. But that doesn't happen because we have this little tidbit at the end, and it's like, I felt betrayed that I didn't get the full picture early enough. Or did I miss it? Like, was I clueless? I was just really angry about it.
Well, here's...
Because if that's true, how are they ever friends again?
Here's the pushback that I'm going to give you.
No, I'm just... I want it. I get it. Clarity in my life.
I think this was a really interesting choice because not everything is fixable.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes two. It takes both parties. So if Sav is interested in saying, hey, I'd like to repair our friendship... But Izzy isn't interested in growing as a human. You can't fix that. That's not fixable. Because Izzy is still choosing that, A, my brother, I can't accept that my brother did this.
She still couldn't at the end.
That's what I'm saying. I'm choosing.
She's like, if you say that word, I can't go back.
We can't go back. And it's like,
how did they get back anyway?
They can't because
no. But how did they get back to where they were friends now? After the bullying, that's what I don't understand.
Well, that's what I'm gonna say is I think Sav didn't like feeling alone and actively chose. Well, I'll take an Izzy that will pay attention to me and be my friend again over nothing. Because that's the choice she's given, is either try to find a new friend group, which she's already feeling terrible. The entire school is cyberbullying her. So it's making it very difficult to make any new friends. So if I can have Izzy,
who's avoiding the topic, but
wants to be my friend, that's better than nothing. But when
but
you
why
fast
are they still
forward,
fr- yeah, why are we still friends now?
When you fast
now?
Forward, it's all about whether Sav is choosing to that radical acceptance. I'm going to accept that she's never going to do this and choose to try to salvage a friendship with her based off of what she's choosing to offer, or I am going to say, hey, I'm done with this friendship. I think fast forward, one of two things happens. Well, two basic things. One, Sav ultimately is like, I'm done. I can't deal with this. You're not putting in the work to the friendship that I am, and they break it off. Or two, this relationship that Izzy has screams, we didn't think it through, we didn't talk about it, we didn't take time to get to know each other. We're literally trying to hurry and have a wedding on a deadline, which doesn't seem like the best long-term relationship choice. So to me, it seems like this relationship's on a clock. It's not gonna last.
I was just frustrated.
Everything's gonna crash.
I was frustrated that it didn't crash. Like at the end, we see Savvy and Wes get together, and like that stereotypical, I found a man or I found a relationship at the end of the day. And it's like, but this book kind of started off as like finding your queer tribe and healing a relationship that was in utter turmoil in high school and like it coming back. And I don't know. I wanted more from that as a resolution. That's what I'm going to say.
You wanted to see more of
that friendship.
Sav and Wes's relationship?
No, Sav and Izzy's relationship coming to a resolution.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like if the book was longer, we could have seen, you know, like how that basically fell apart. But also, even if it does, that doesn't mean that Sav owes it to Izzy to pick up the pieces. She doesn't.
I know. I just wanted a clear-cut definition of what that was going to look like moving forward. Because that comment about Wes was so, like, that would have ended it for me.
Yeah.
Like, she still doesn't get it. Why do you still want this human in your life?
Yeah.
Just, like, I don't seek out the person who messaged me 10 years ago. Every so often she'll message me about something I said or whatever. Or was like, hey, when you're in the area. And, like, I lived in North Texas since then. Like, over 10 years. And I actively don't seek her out to go to dinner with for a reason.
Yeah, that's fair. I think Sav isn't at that point in her life yet where she's like, I'm going to actively make this decision.
And I just thought the whole point of the book, aside from not just the point, but like recovering and recognizing what sexual trauma is and working through that, was also getting rid of the toxic people in your life.
Well, but that...
Especially since she's connected to that trauma.
That concept of rectifying and working through a sexual assault trauma, that isn't we did it, now I'm done. It really isn't. It's there. It's there forever. Like, you just work through it over time, and things become easier, and you know a little more about what to expect, and you don't have to, the trauma doesn't have to feel so heavy once you're moving through that. But it's there. It's always there.
Yeah, but I think, you know,
she's just old enough to know that she see it, recognize it for what it is, but that process of living with it, that's the rest of her life.
Interesting that you said she's old enough.
Old enough.
That is the title.
It is the title. That's why I said that.
Oh, okay. Good for you. I thought it was just...
How clever.
I thought this tidbit was interesting, that Savvy says in the book she thinks she doesn't respect men, but she thinks she could like and love them. And Vera calls it fluid. It's a fluid femme milestone. So could like and love men, but couldn't respect them. Do you want to comment on that?
Do you want to comment?
As I go on to pontificate. No, but like from my perspective, right? I kind of felt like I could see that with like some of the people I've worked with and some of my friends. Like every so often they'll say something that's just not quite like progressive enough or kind of anti-woman or whatever. And I'm like, I just lose a little bit of respect for you.
I mean, I can see that, but like, I have found that I can feel that way about anybody, regardless of gender.
I think for me, it happens more with men.
I definitely think that the less marginalization that you have, the more likely it is that you don't see those things that provide context to be more inclusive. Like you have to do more work to see that and to proactively be an ally. I mean, I don't know, that line, I was like I can get it, but also it's 50% of the population. Like, well, less than, but...
Well, it's like 48%.
Yeah. But that's something that...
Besides, that just tracks gender at birth. It doesn't track actual gender.
But, I mean, we're all here. We're all part of the problem, and we can be part of the solution. The more that we can recognize that every single one of us can be part of making the world a better place, I don't think it ultimately serves us to look at ways of keeping people out, even if they are the very people that kept us out in the first place. Like, let's do the additional work, if we can afford it at the time. Let's do the additional work of bringing those people in.
I think, too, it kind of shows a way of, like, more self-respect for ourselves, of, like, mm-hmm. especially in the queer community, to, like, have an open heart toward, like, cis white gay men who ran the show for decades,
mm-hmm.
to embrace them into different queer spaces.
Yeah.
Not to, like, make them control it, but, like, offer them
offering them the ability to see mm-hmm. what some of the other folks that are under that umbrella are experiencing. Because, I mean, that education is the first part of, you know, gaining that empathy. Right now I'm taking a college course that's basically it's womanist spiritual activism. And
can you explain the difference between feminist and womanist?
Yeah, so...
Because I actually just learned that in a book I'm reading. So.
Oh, look at that. Look at us learning. And our dog's barking in the background.
Yeah, classic us moment.
Classic. Anyway, so like, womanist isn't based on gender. It is based on a very all-inclusive, very holistic look at our world, literally our entire world, and the interconnectedness that we all see. But it was a movement that was like very much first pushed forward and brought about by women of color. But it's about the interconnectedness of everybody. But it doesn't ever take men out of the equation. Like, they are also part of it. In fact, there are some really awesome famous Buddhist monks, like male monks, that also...
Can you be a female monk?
Do what?
Can you be a female monk? Something to Google later.
Mm-hmm. Whereas feminist is more about centering the equality of women.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a difference in the focal point. Womanist is about none of us are free unless all of us are free. And how do we all interconnect with this world, not just men and women? It's about... you know, nature. It's about every marginalized group, which includes men, includes non-binary folks. Like, it includes everything. It's a very all-inclusive encapsulation of equality and how we relate to the world.
Well, I'd give you an A in that class.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm working on that A.
Okay, you do, you do.
Although my feedback is like, you're getting closer to defining womanist. And I'm like,
I think you just did.
That feels like a line, yeah. But okay. Have you? Next time I'll just put a link to this podcast and be like, fast forward to.
Too long, yeah. I do want to talk about this before we wrap up, because I know we're getting a little long. So Savvy mentions to Nova at some point that tops and bottom designations are just as useless as gender binary. I'm going to let you comment on that.
Yeah, I know you and I have talked a lot about, not only, we've joked about, like, from moment one about tops and bottoms, but it was more of like a jumping off point to a discussion about
gender roles.
Gender roles. Not only, you know, day to day, but in a sexual capacity. I think at the most that needs to be a jumping off point for a discussion. It shouldn't inform what you should take on or you should take on. This is your role. I think it can be incredibly limiting, and I think it can be just basically a roadblock and serve as gatekeeping language if we don't actually explore what our individual relationship dynamic looks like. What's important to us? What are we interested in? What are our skill sets? What am I not good at? What's our agreement to how, you know, you're in charge of home repair, you're in charge of dishes. It has nothing to do with gender. It has everything to do with deciding for that individual relationship, how are we breaking this up?
And how you don't wash the dishes before you put them in the dishwasher.
I wash
the dishes.
I rinse them.
Yeah.
That's all that's necessary.
So if you start to run out of clean dishes or you need something in the dishwasher, you have to then wash it again or for the first time.
Yeah.
Before you can just take it out and use it.
Yeah, no. Well, the dishwasher is there to wash dishes.
We're not going to get into this argument. You're wrong. But I do like to wash it before I put it in. No, the dishwasher is an extra layer of cleanliness. Yes.
Then it should be called a dish duster. I don't get it.
Whatever. I'm right, you're wrong, the end.
Oh, uh-huh, uh-huh. So how would you like to discuss tops and bottoms? I'm right, you're wrong.
I don't think we can designate that it's as useless as the gender binary. I think they're very different things.
I think
they both slightly encapsulate gender to an extent. You know, like, we talk about the power dynamic, like, when we go out to dinner, and, like, if the server doesn't see whoever sets the card down and it's kind of in the middle, right?
Mm-hmm.
You used to be like, well, whoever they bring it back to, you're the top, or you have top energy.
Yeah, that was our joke.
Yeah, and so a lot of the times it was me, and I think it's just sometimes how I hold myself.
Mm.
You're a bit of a huncher when you sit down.
Oh, I'm a huncher.
You're a
huncher.
Yeah, you're a little bit of a huncher when we go out, because I think you can finally, like, sit and relax.
Mm.
And for you, a deep breath out is a little bit of a hunch. And for me, I'm like, I'm calm and relaxed. I'm sitting up high, and I feel good.
You're also taller.
That doesn't designate how I sit in a chair.
I know. But, like, you're gonna
so
sit
you're
taller
wrong.
Than me. I'm just saying. But yeah, you do bring a lot of top energy in your day-to-day.
Yeah. That's just kind of...
It's more about... It's a fun thing to say as, like, queer colloquialisms. But I don't know that by itself it informs a lot.
I think, too, there is this, well, you talked about in a sexual context, that the bottoms end up being, like, the pillow princesses.
Well, I would argue those are not mutually exclusive.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, I think that's why people are like, well, I don't want to be the bottom. And it's like, well, why not? Like, the bottom of an Oreo is the same as the top, but sometimes they don't get all the cream. And now I realize that that's weird. But, you have to twist them and disconnect them.
Sure.
You know, lick them, put it back, and
whoa,
dunk them. You ever did that?
This has gotten to be the weirdest conversation. You chose a wild, wild comparison.
Well, I do like my food analogies. My point is that It just think like the glass half full, the glass half empty. Still the same amount in the glass. You're still getting hopefully the same amount of enjoyment out of the relationship and the sexual encounter.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope is that at least when people are like, no, no, bottom, bottom, that like they're still participating in the activity. They're not just, you know, it's not like you're giving me a massage and I'm just enjoying the massage, which I do enjoy that on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
But there is active participation
from both sides.
From both sides.
Yeah, I think it's like initially this is a shorthand for
things you're into.
What are you down for? Oh, we're both top energy incompatible. Unless like one of us is like, yeah, I'm more verse.
I also think that's the older generation being very much like, this is my sexuality in a box and it's not changing because this is my old...
It's like static.
This is my old tattered shoebox of all of my like gay encounters as postcards that I kept up, and this is what I have and this is what I'm bringing to the table and it will never change, you know?
And I don't think that's necessarily true for everybody.
No, and this was kind of like a new age queerness book because, mm-hmm. you know, you're looking at a lot of different things, and I think, you know, you had the polyamorous relationship and stuff mm-hmm. like that, and you had... We're seeing more of that in media, which I think is good. I get very jealous. I couldn't do more than one person in a relationship.
I don't have the energy.
We have miscommunications between the two of us while we're not even looking at screens. So it's like, how do we even do this with a third person?
Oh, it would be a hot nightmare.
It'd be a long
mad
group text.
Respect mm-hmm. for our poly peeps out there.
Yeah. I am curious when you do a group text with like three people, do they each get their own color and iPhone?
No.
See? So that's a cluster.
No, it's you, the speaker, are blue. Everybody else is, like, gray.
Yeah, I'd have to, like, look above the name. I don't know. Like I said.
Well, that's why you gotta assign photos.
I know. But I think that's why I'm interested in, like, reading about it. Because, like, seeing how it, you know, it kind of evolved and it goes down. Because I think, especially when you talk about, like, the non-traditional family unit, right? With, like, the two parents, whatever gender, mm-hmm. and like the kids, right? Mm-hmm. But they've been married forever, then they have the kids and they're girl together. So like if you have a poly relationship, you naturally have like three parental figures. If there's a breakup, then you have lots and lots of step parents.
Mm-hmm.
The more the merrier to help raise that kid, I think is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it gives, I think one of the really cool things about the aspect of a family in a polyamorous relationship is that child gets to see multiple versions of what it means to be whatever gender, you know, whether it's, you know, male, female, non-binary, because I think all of us benefit from seeing more than one way to be a person. There's not, you know, the being a woman isn't a monolith. Being non-binary isn't a monolith. Being a man isn't a monolith. There are so many nuanced ways to perform that gender. I mean, this wasn't a polyamorous relationship with a kid, but I've always been a fan of that concept. I think it's, you know, because like there's a saying, it takes a village.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no downside to having more people involved.
Yeah, and people live far away from family members now. Like, it's mm-hmm. not, it's always, it's not always like,
we're more mobile society.
Yeah, like, oh, well, we grew up in this town, so we're only an hour away. Like, it's where the job is, or the college, or this or that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready for the rating?
I think I am.
Okay, so I'm giving it 4 rainbows.
Okay.
I struggled with the jumping around and keeping the storyline straight. I know that I feel that there was an intention with the flashbacks, and mm-hmm. that was very clear what the flashbacks were.
Mm-hmm.
I think when it didn't flashback and it went to the high school and she was still talking to Izzy, it was unclear of when it was. Like, it took me a minute to be like, mm-hmm. oh, this is back then. Because
mm-hmm.
they're, you know, because I also just kind of like felt that Izzy was still also at the college, even though before she visited, like it just mm-hmm. kind of felt that she was always there. But she just had this presence. So that, I would have liked it then and now, aside from the flashbacks. I also found their, like I talked about earlier, their friendship healing was unrealistic after Sav says that, you know, Izzy turned the whole school against her and cyberbullied her.
Yeah.
I don't think that's something you hyperbolize.
Back. Oh, yeah.
I don't think you hyperbolize that.
Oh,
I think if you're really saying she turned the whole school against you, it doesn't matter how big it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. And So I just don't think many people can come back from that, especially in today's age. So that just felt a little untethered from
reality.
From reality. So that's, I just wanted to fully explain that, like I said, because I know this book was a really important book. I think it for the right person at the right time. But it was a very heavy content.
I think I'd also do 4.
Really?
Which I normally don't go. I'm just 5 across the board for everybody.
You're a 5-star kind of guy. Oh.
I'm not sure what that means. But like...
I do.
I really struggled initially to connect with the content until it was revealed that Sav was raped. And then I was like... Oh boy, I can relate to that. That's a bummer. And then I connected, but it was so heavy. It was a very difficult read for me, as it probably is for a lot of folks. I really appreciated how certain topics were brought up and talked about, and it made me kind of reconsider a few things. And I think that's a mark of a really important book. I don't know, there were just, you mentioned some of them already, but there were just certain things that I was like,
not realistic or not,
like how she dealt with Izzy and how she worked through that. I mean, part of that is youth, you know, you're not quite your fully formed self at that age. You're just starting to kind of uncover who you are and what matters to you and your boundaries. I think the few things that I found problematic would have resolved themselves had we gone further into the future with Sav and seen kind of further development. But as kind of a vignette of, you know, a couple different points in her life, you know, it's hard to say I enjoyed a book about rape, but I enjoyed seeing her life and the people that she came across, and then her, you know, making some choices that were more about boundaries. Like when the second time she broke it off with Nova, who was a very problematic character, but like you could understand at the same time, you could understand how, you know, if you're struggling with self-worth, you might be kind of pulled back into that toxic relationship with an ex just because you want some form of attention and you don't feel like you deserve this other person that seems like they're into you, that's really cool. Like when she's first, you know, kind of getting to know Wes. Especially when she thinks Wes has like a girlfriend or something. But yeah, I think I'm at a 4 on it. It was definitely a difficult read, but I think it's, if somebody has a bandwidth to read it as far as dealing with those difficult topics, I think it's a really good read.
Well, our next book for November is another reader request. We're reading Icebreaker by A.L. Griziadeh.
We're on a reader request spree.
We are.
And until next time,
we're all queer here.
Absolutely.